Okay.
All right.
We're good to go.
Cool.
Hey, everyone.
Hello. Another great intro.
Keep
fucking
it.
Fucking hell.
Sick. This is strong. This is slick. This is professional. I feel safe.
Welcome to Stacks and Chats. We've got our guest, Kanoa.
Kia ora. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
I'm so good. I'm so pumped to be here, you guys. I'm like a super Snacks and Chats nerd and I've listened to every episode. And now I'm sitting in front of a bowl of snacks and having a chat with you guys. Yay.
You're here. You've made it.
Yes. I'm real glad that you mentioned the snacks because we almost never do. We've been like, this has been the most useless naming of a podcast ever.
You've got a real selection too. Like there's those posh jelly beans that all taste different.
Yep.
Some Santa, little Santa chocolates. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
It is.
I feel kind of bad about my chewing gum and my Mentos that I bought.
No, I think that's necessary because we're drinking some very strong black coffees right now. So I feel like I'm going to need that.
Okay, good. Thanks.
It's a good balance. Yeah, we got everything we need.
Thanks for giving me respect for my chewing gum.
Into it. So yeah, let's start with the, as a fan, you'll know what's coming up now. When people ask you where you're from, what do you tell them?
Yeah, I know it's coming and I've been thinking about how to answer this, but I think what everybody has mentioned is that it's not necessarily the easiest question to answer straight up. It's changed a lot as I've gotten older. I've sort of started to realise that when a Māori person asks you where you come from, that's part of what we do. And so you talk about your tūranga waiwai and your whānau and I kind of struggled with that for a long time because I didn't have a huge connection to my family who were from Ruatoria on the East Coast. And also because my mum's Pākehā, she always said, you're half Māori and you're half Pākehā. And my mum's family played such a huge role in my upbringing. You know, I lived with my grandparents for a couple of years and so I really stuck really fiercely to that. Mm. And I would make sure that I explained that I was sort of qualifying, you know, giving them a breakdown of my DNA when they were just trying to say, hi, what's up? So it depends on who I'm talking to. I've realised that, you know, it's sort of a sign of respect. It's a part of, you know, protocol to be able to say where you're from. But really and truly, my best yarn, if I've had a glass of wine and I'm talking to someone that I know I'm going to talk to for a while, I say from all over because my parents, I was born in Gisborne and then my parents lived in a house truck until I was about four. And before I was 16, I think I lived in 20 different houses moving around with them. Once they finally decided to get out of a house truck and into a house, they
just kept moving.
Couldn't stop gypsying, yeah.
Incredible. And that was all around the country?
Yeah, like all around the Coromandel, East Coast, heaps in Central Otago as well, because that's where my mum's family are from. So in a little place called Bannockburn and Cromwell, in Dunedin. So, yeah, gypsy whānau growing up.
Great.
Yeah. And that's a really long answer to
an incredible answer. I love it. And so when did you learn to, when Māori people would ask you where you're from, at what age did you learn to be, to like say, I guess what they were expecting you to say?
Yeah, do you know what? I think I'm still working that out. I'm still working out how to do that properly. But I guess maybe, you know, maybe once I got into my 20s and sort of, I did this thing in my 20s. I did a course called Te Arereo Māori, which was through Te Wānanga o Aotearoa. And that was really, like, I sort of dabbled in learning, trying to learn some reo at high school. But I think by the time I got into my, what's fifth form? You know, whatever fifth form is, year
10 maybe? Yeah.
I think once I got to year 10, I just sort of unfortunately decided it was taking up too much space in my studies and I wanted to do other stuff.
Mm.
So once I turned 20, I realised the error of my ways and wanted to establish a connection with that eel, even if I didn't really have a connection really with that family.
So
that's where I sort of cottoned on to that idea.
What was it when you were 20? What was it about that age, or what was it about that time in your life that made you realise that you wanted to do that?
There were a couple of things. One, my dad, who is my Māori parent, had moved away. He was living in Australia at the time that I think, you know, he'd been a huge part of my life, and I saw him pretty regularly, but this put a big distance between us, and I sort of thought, shit, if I don't kind of claim this for my own, he's not here to sort of lead me back to Rotoria, so I need to do something about this myself. I was also in quite a hard-out relationship with this guy who we ended up buying a house together. And when I say we ended up buying a house together, he and his parents bought the house. And I was I bought some cups or something. And, you know, at that stage of my life, I think I thought, oh, this is it. So, you know, maybe I need to get really serious about who I am and what my identity is. And, that relationship ended.
But you still have the deal.
Yeah, kind of. But it's such a work in progress. And I still can't have a conversation with people. And I think people's expectations of, you know, my ability to speak Māori are probably quite high. And it's weird, you know, that feeling of like when someone's expectations are really high of you, it can actually be almost a hindrance. Like I feel like I might have maybe pulled away a bit too far in the other direction in recent years. But yeah, I don't know. I want to.
Yeah, no, totally. Mm. I know, I don't know if it's like this for you and your work, but in the media, there's not that many brown people around. So I know, like, for me, people are, they're like, oh, you're Samoan, and I can't speak either. So they're like, oh, what does this word mean? Or how do you say this? And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, I'm not the answer to all your island questions.
No, you know, I know. But I'm also loath to shut those people down too, because I kind of think, you know, some of my colleagues are incredible journos, but we've got a lot of people that are from the UK or, you know, lots of people that grew up in the South Island where the importance of reo and stuff, I know from experience because I went to school in Dunedin, is not as high. And so I'm always really pumped when people want to have a conversation about that and want to ask that. But yeah, it's kind of shit to have to say, let me just Google that.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's probably more like a reflection on my insecurities rather than like that being a wrong thing to do.
Right. It's a horrible feeling though.
Yeah,
you know, you wish that you were this wealth of knowledge and that you could be like, oh, don't worry, I've got you. But, you know, like anything in the work that we do, you know, we both work in news spaces and I think all of that stuff is sort of collaborative and it's a conversation, and I'm pleased to be a part of those conversations, I think.
It's interesting that you are speaking about Māori language the way you are, because you have almost become the poster girl for taking te reo mainstream, you know, like in the job that you do. Did you have any idea of the kind of scrutiny you would come under introducing just little things like kia ora into the news?
No, I can't claim kia ora. That's been a big part. That's honestly, a few people have said it before.
You shouldn't.
I'm really proud to say that TV3 under Mark Jennings, you know, the newsreaders always open the show. I think I've opened the show with kia ora for the last 20 years or so. But yeah, I mean, I was just sort of saying stuff like, you know, the names of the North and South Island, Te Kau Maui and Te Waipounamu, and I don't know, sometimes I just try to chuck in other little phrases. And the truth is, it's because I was looking at Aotearoa, at this map of New Zealand, night after night after night, and I was thinking about all sorts of things like, you know, when I went to Te Maru, what was the weather like there and what can I talk about and what are they doing in Tauranga tomorrow? And I was you know, thinking about all of those things, it was this kind of New Zealand soup that was going around in my mind and trying to write and be creative. And then I was like, hang on a minute, Māori, I know some of that. Yeah. And what a perfect place to do it, because, you know, when I'm saying Aotearoa, we're looking at New Zealand. And, yeah, if I'm talking about Tāmaki Makaurau, I'm literally pointing to Auckland on a map. And so that's where it came from in the first instance. And I was really shocked that people railed against it. I got emails and I got tweets and I got, yeah, just really, you know, I'd be having this really benign interaction with someone about something, you know, work related, weather related, and then they'd sort of sign off saying, oh, and can you stop using Māori words in the weather? We all speak English, you know. And so I sent out a tweet about it. I felt angry. I felt really angry. Like it had been a really short time and I wasn't actually used to having that kind of scrutiny.
Yeah.
You know, coming from this like lovely safe space of entertainment and kids telly, which is my background. You know, if people got in touch with you, it was just to be like, love you. And then I was like, oh no. But I felt mad. I just thought, what the, where are we? Like, what year is this? What is going on? And so I seen a tweet and I didn't really think anything more of it. And then, yeah, it just, it blew up into something that people really wanted to have a conversation about. I think, unfortunately, you know, I've never professed to be fluent in reo, but unfortunately the conversation got so big that everyone sort of thought they knew the story but didn't know the details.
Yeah.
But what I am really proud of is that all of these people wanted to have that conversation. They all wanted to say, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think that's a good thing to come out of. But to go to circle back to what we were talking about, yeah, it kind of put a lot of pressure on me. I sort of all of a sudden thought, oh shit, like, what have I done? Like, I've sort of inadvertently lied to people about what I can do or what I know. And honestly, it's been a hard thing to reconcile. It's been a hard thing to figure out, like, how do I fix this?
Oh, is anything broken though? I don't know if it's something to fix.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm a woman in the media. I'm intensely self-critical. Aren't you? Are you?
Well, this is the thing. I'm not really exposed the way you are. I think that's the thing about TV. I feel like there's never been any of that kind of scrutiny for me.
Yeah, really?
Which is the only time is when Dave and I got married and people posted stuff on their like Facebooks about like David Dallas getting married, and then and everyone was just like, who? You know,
his wife, if you believe.
You know, but that's like the closest I've come to like mainstream, like,
yeah,
quotation mark mainstream. So it's never been, there's never been that for me. I was reading back on some of the stories and I thought, what was really cool about that was some of the comments that I guess your bosses at TV3 made in response to that. I thought it was really cool how supportive they were of that. Do you feel supported in terms of not just the reo, but as you're talking about, you know, being a woman in media as well? Like, do you feel that support around you there?
Totally. Like, I just, sometimes I have to pinch myself when I go in and sit down at my desk and I look to my left and there's Kate Roger, and I look to my right and there's Michael Mora, who's this like kick-ass foreign correspondent. Lisa Owen sits behind me, who's just, I'm just probably one of the best human beings on the planet. And they're all incredibly inspirational and supportive. And, you know, it can be anything from like, damn girl, I like your shoes, yeah, to, you know, I can turn around and say, hey, I'm really struggling with this. What would you do if you were in my position? And they're right there. Like, that whole place is full of really special people.
Are you able to like switch off, or is there any coping mechanism you've learnt to deal with that inevitable criticism?
Yeah, I mean, I think that whole process probably taught me that it is a part of my job now. It seems like a really trite thing to say, but, you know, it is. People haters want to hate. And I'm really lucky that I've got, you know, like my close friends and my boyfriend are like, they're involved in the television industry in a way, you know, sort of behind the scenes and stuff. So they kind of know what I'm talking about when I'm talking about it, but they actually couldn't give two shits. And so, yeah. So, I mean, I can talk about work with them if I want to, or I can leave my phone at home so I'm not checking Twitter all the time and, you know, just go and live my life. I'm really, really lucky to have such amazing, amazing friends.
One of my favourite things I've read is what you wrote after Tony Veitch had put up that Facebook status about like talking about his haters and stuff and how he, you know, like I can't remember
his
exactly.
His non-apology,
yeah. Basically. Yeah, like everyone move on, nothing to see here type thing. And the thing what you wrote was just so concise but so powerful.
Oh, thanks, man. Sorry, but, I think my phone's we're having this like real emo. I'm not going to turn that off like I should have done when I was, first got here. Oh, it's my mum. Sorry, mum.
Put her on.
Yeah, mum, we're just going to talk about abuse and stuff.
But yeah, it was so powerful in just a few sentences.
Oh,
but I wonder how worried you were about, I mean, you revealed a lot about your family in that as well. Was that a big worry for you doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I did call my mum to tell her that we were going to publish that. But I felt so, so strongly about, and I still do feel really strongly about the way that he's handled that. Tony Veitch has handled all of that. I think if he was truly sorry, he either would have said sorry or he would have ignored it, but he hasn't. He keeps digging it back up himself.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm not going to weigh in on whether somebody deserves to have a job or not, but at the time I was so angry. And I think one of the great pleasures and privileges of what we do is that we have the space to shout about it.
Mm.
And I felt that, you know, if I shouted about that, perhaps it might be something that got into the ears of someone that needed to hear it. And I explained that to my mum, and she's an amazing human. She's a really choice lady. And I think she sort of understood that, you know, in as much as I was talking about her and I was talking about my dad, it was actually, I was sort of sharing something of myself and that she didn't have any ownership of that.
Yeah.
I've never talked to my dad about it, mainly because he doesn't really have a phone or the internet. So he probably doesn't know that it exists. But he's also a cool dude, you know, like I can talk to him about anything, but I just, you know, I'm not going to bring it up anytime soon, I don't think.
Because it was funny, well, not funny, but it was interesting how you're like, you know, he reforms himself and then he's just this like super touchy-feely counsellor, which is like the complete other way that brings all its own kind of unique problems.
He was the worst, man. He was the absolute worst. Yeah, like I think I talked about the fact that he would like stand up at my assemblies and like be like, woohoo, in the background, like, oh, God, you'd think that I'd be better at dealing with criticism and embarrassment than I am, having him, like, call me out all the time. And he's kind of circled back a little bit. I think he's finding some balance and, you know, he's doing some different things now to counselling. He's actually picking kiwi fruit into Pukki at the moment, so I expect a good haul sometime soon.
Excellent.
But
that's a tough job, kiwi fruit picking.
It is, and he's like 60 or something now. I'm like, bro, go to bed. But yeah, that's the gypsy in him coming out again, I think.
Is there any particular reason you guys moved around so much when you were young?
Well, they were both making a lot of art. Like, for a time we lived with Barry Brickell, the potter in Coromandel. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he like built this railway and so that he could go out into his property and dig clay and bring it back, and he had all these kilns. Like, his work's amazing and the legacy that he left is amazing. He actually died last year, I think. And so for a time they were living with him and, you know, making pots with him. And yeah, I think my mum was probably trying to escape her, like farming life. She had five brothers and sisters and she was the youngest sister. And I think she was just trying to break away and be a bit naughty and rebellious. And she found that in my dad, in a hut in the Coromandel. Yeah, I mean, I think also the fact that we didn't have a lot, so it was sort of like you went where the work was or, yeah. You know, where the next big thing was going to happen. My dad always had plans on the boil. But yeah, I mean, I'm really grateful for those experiences. It's pretty...
Yeah, because when you're young, it's sort of like, it's all fun, right? Like it's...
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, when you're little, it's all an adventure. I think it's more like looking back, I'm like, oh, we're actually, yeah, we were kind of poor, but you don't realise it when you're young, you know?
Totally. Yeah. You've got no idea until you get to school and someone goes, didn't you wear those pants yesterday?
And you're like, yeah.
Oh, whoops. Is that not what we do?
Yeah. Oh, don't, aren't we allowed to wear pants like twice in a row? Yeah.
Do you not like my purple corduroys as much as I do?
Oh, my gosh. In terms of like how that might have affected your personality or anything like that, or the way you relate to people, that sort of thing, like how did moving around?
Well, I think I always I was never afraid to ask people questions because I was meeting them all the time.
Yeah.
And I was, yeah, especially not adults. I think adults were always kind of like, whoa, when I come up to them and be like, hey, bro, how's it going? Where are you from? What are you doing? What's going on? Da, 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 da. And I think, you know, meeting all those people growing up, you know, I knew what a lesbian was when I was five, and I knew, you know, what Mandarin sounded like. And I just knew, I was exposed to all these things that, you know, it's weird when you meet some people and the sort of sheltered lives they've led, and then they kind of go all nuts when they're 20. I kind of went the other way. I think I had quite a nuts upbringing, went real nerd in high school.
Yeah.
And then kind of like, I feel like I started getting the balance a bit more right in my 20s.
Yeah. That must help you, you know, like having an open mind like that. That must have helped you throughout your career. I don't know if it's like interviewing techniques or that sort of thing. That must have come in handy somehow.
Well, I'm actually not that great at interviews.
It's I was watching your interviews before this. I thought they were great. Was it the C4 stuff?
Oh,
yeah. It was like really good and natural.
Oh,
yeah.
Thanks for saying that. But sometimes I'll finish a chat and I'll be like, did I just like say stuff instead of asking questions?
No, it's good.
But I think what it did do was it made me really interested in people and what makes them tick. So even if I'm yet to kind of, you know, get all those broadcasting tools and those interviewing skills tucked away in my belt properly, I'm interested and I'm excited to know. And is it like super lame to say that I empathize with people more? It's an awful thing. As I'm saying it, I'm like, ugh, don't say that.
Empathy is a good thing.
I know, but are you meant to say it about yourself? Like, I'm so empathetic.
Yeah,
like,
no.
Check me out.
Yeah, no, I feel like other people are definitely meant to say it about you. Yeah.
Beep, beep, beep. I'm back out of that.
It's like the whole, you can't say you're woke, you know?
Can anyone say anyone's woke?
No,
anymore?
Yeah, that's done, actually. If it hasn't been called already, it's been called now, yeah.
We've done it. We've achieved nothing else today on Snacks and Chats. We've told you woke is dead.
And did you, growing up as a kid watching the TV, did you ever like watch the weather. What is it, weather presenter? Is that the correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm a weather presenter because I'm not a meteorologist.
Right.
But.
And so what do you call the meteorologists?
You call them the weather presenter as well, but they are like legit. What I am is interested in communicating big, complicated ideas so that everyone feels like they have some ownership of it. And I think that kind of comes from kids TV. Like, you don't want to... Like, there's some really interesting stuff out of having a kids TV background. So there's this really big school of thinking that you never change your vocabulary just because you're on a kids TV show. Because if a kid doesn't understand a word, they're hopefully going to ask someone, what does that mean?
That's cool.
So you're never talking down to them. I feel like sometimes the news and stuff like the weather, people can kind of go, oh, that's not for me. You know, maybe they're sort of quick to say that, oh, I'm bored, or they're turned off by it. But that's perhaps because I feel that they don't deserve to have that information. Mm. I'm not really talking about weather in that sense. I mean, perhaps more politics. But, you know, even to some extent, I kind of go, oh, embarrassing. I don't really know much about the by-election, so I'm just not going to listen. But, you know, I think that's something that the people that I work with do all the time, is sort of like fight to bust through that. And how do you make this for the people? Because that's what news is, right? Mm. We're there to like call people out and to explain things and, you know, to share this information. And I think that's the same with weather. Like, weather is news that literally affects every single person every single day. People are interested in it. They want to know about it. So
sometimes it's life or death shit as well, right?
Literally.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally. So how do you take that stuff and make it accessible, make everyone feel like they're a part of it? And, that's kind of where I come from.
So how difficult is it to write? Because you script that all yourself, eh?
Yes, this piece of chocolate that's melting.
I'll take a milkshake break.
Yeah, Ben just with the solo milkshake, lucky.
It's mine, bro.
What was your question? I forgot when I ate chocolate.
Oh, because you script all that yourself, right? Mm. So how difficult is that to do?
Some days it's really hard. Just because if there's not much going on in the weather, it can be difficult
sunny
to
everywhere.
Make it interesting.
Yeah,
yeah. you get the gist. Just watch and see. But I really love language, and I really love language, and I like being able to tattoo around with fitting sentences differently and like making parts of the country flow onto other bits. And, you know, I've got 4 minutes, 4 minutes of solid me chat. That's a long time.
Yeah, it is.
And so, you know, being able to like start a thread at the top of that 4 minutes and keep it going until the end of the 4 minutes is fun. There's something really fun about that.
Do you have any like weather gods that you like look up to, like in terms of past like presenters?
I mean, I think in New Zealand, Jim Hickey is like, nobody will ever forget Jim Hickey.
Yeah,
like he's just incredible. What he brought to that time slot, just his kind of crazy energy and his love of people, I think showed through. You know, his depth of knowledge and weather was ridiculous. Yeah, he was just a legend. Like, I remember watching him, and I think a lot of people remember watching him. He's the gold standard here in New Zealand.
What about Toni? Do you remember her?
Yeah, I do remember her. I never met her, though.
Yeah.
But, yes, definitely Toni Street was...
Yeah.
Yeah, she's pretty
famous. I just
famous.
Know, like, dudes were so... I think it was, like... Was it, like, an MTV... What was she on before... I just
I'm
know.
Not sure.
I don't know. I just know Dave was like so into her, like
bananas
loved her.
About her.
Yeah,
hey.
Yeah.
Hot.
Yeah.
Wow.
But she what like she and so she had that different kind of energy that was very like, I don't want to say flirty because that sort of is diminishing it. Like she was just like a really female. Yeah, I don't know. I'm a bit more of a boy. I find it hard to walk in high heels sometimes.
Okay, well, how about maybe like any advice for people listening who might aspire to do something similar?
Yeah, the best thing that I can say is if you think you want to do this kind of stuff, just start doing it. You know, I didn't actually train in broadcasting or anything like that. I did a year of uni and then I did a massage therapy degree.
Amazing.
Then I worked at the public library and then I started my television career. Yeah, but during that time I was doing like every crappy short film that my friends were making. I was going to auditions for like... there was this thing that they did in Dunedin at the medical school. I can't remember what it was called now, but you would like go and you'd have this whole backstory about this patient that you were, and medical students would interview you so that they could learn their exam techniques.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I don't know.
And you'd get fully into character for that.
Yeah, you had to like go away and you'd have this dossier of, you'd maybe have three patients for the day. That you were going to be, and yeah, sort of present your symptoms, and like maybe your mum didn't know that you were at the doctor, and like, yeah.
Wow.
But you just do all those things and you say yes if someone asks you to show up to something, show up 5 minutes early, say please and thanks, and literally, I mean, some of the work that I've gotten is from people that I met 5 years ago. That I just wasn't a dick to them.
That's important, hey, to not be a dick.
Yeah. And I do think, but I do think it is.
I have trouble with that sometimes.
But I think it is particularly important for, you know, Māori and Pacific Islanders, because we have this like, you know, we're sort of weighed down by this thing of not wanting to put ourselves out there. And so sometimes we pull back too far in the wrong direction. But if you can muster a smile and a hi and a thanks, it makes, and be good at whatever you're there to do, it makes such a difference, such a difference. I think about the like young people that work at work now, and I'm like, oh, yep, future star. You know, you can pick it. You can totally pick it because they're energetic and they're enthusiastic and they're kind and nice and good people. Yeah.
What is it about, because, you know, we both have Palangi mothers, but so we still have that influence, but I feel like, as you say, there's still that, like, tendency to kind of hold back or whatever. Any idea why that is? Can you crack the code?
Yeah, I'm so glad to have the opportunity to answer this one.
I've been thinking about this for years.
No, but I do. I actually have been thinking about it. And I do wonder sometimes if it's... because I think you and I do have a pretty similar kind of story in that... like maybe we're trying to find our roots or something, as like kind of corny and cheesy as that is to say. You know, maybe that sort of uncertainty and that shyness and that whakamā comes from, you know, not having a real grasp of a language or a connection to a place or a family, that, you know, some of our cousins and other family and stuff probably do.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's a little bit of that. I don't know.
Yeah. Shit.
Sad.
Sad. I feel like it's a good time to finish.
We have to go now.
We have to go. Sorry. And cry.
I'm going to eat sugar to cheer me up. Yeah.